Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Vicky Fleetwood, and you're listening to the All Over Rugby podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the All Over podcast. The only rugby podcast gives you news, views and opinion on a semi-infrequent basis all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter. We are at All Over Podcast. All Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook. And you can find all of our podcasts. Don't know what happened there. On the Sports Podcast Network. Welcome back. We didn't quite get back last week. After the French debacle, for a number of reasons, but we'll chat about it tonight, and we'll also chat about England's Six Nations performance in general. I am joined, as you've already heard, the dulcet tones of everyone's favourite behind the camera operator, Dougie Andrews. Welcome, Lensman.
Hi.
I'm also joined by the nicest man in Cornish Rugby podcasting, Ben Eustace.
Hi, Ben. Also, hi.
I've got a feeling already that this is going to be... Well, I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be interesting. Doug has got a very... For those of you not able to watch...
I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be interesting.
Well, it could be interesting. It'd be interesting for us anyway. We are going to give our opinions on England's Six Nations performance and performances for a brief half an hour stint. So if you're listening in for any real chat about France or Ireland or Wales or Scotland or Italy, then you've come to the wrong place. Other than maybe slagging off the Irish of how fucking sanctimonious they are about everything. Ben. First of all, how do you rate England's performance on Saturday as a whole against Ireland?
Well, I think it was definitely their best performance of the tournament. I think, although they beat Wales, a few of us said at the time it was a bit like a Division 2 game. And France definitely proved that by punching us into next week. But yeah, I mean, the performance against Ireland, they're on a bit of a hide into nothing, put in a decent shift first half, then got completely shafted and put in probably an even better shift in for about 20 minutes of the second half, which is kind of what happened last time. And it's, to be clear, not Ireland's fault that England players keep getting sent off against them. It's not really England's fault either. My brother said to me, he said, you know, it's almost the best thing that could happen for Borthwick because he's got a really good first half performance, and now anything that happens in the second half is a bonus. But I don't know. It's just difficult, isn't it? Ireland never won a Grand Slam at home. So does, you know, if it's still 1 or 4 points difference with 10 minutes to go, does it change the game a lot? But going back to your original question, I don't think it changes England's Six Nations that much. They've had one good performance at the end. Well, that's what Italy did last year. They had one good performance at the end and snuck a win at the end, but they've still lost every game this time out. Even though they have, you know, vastly improved, they, you know, they've been a little bit unlucky a couple of times, but, you know, that victory was maybe a little bit of a false dawn, and we're going to have to see if that's the case with England. If the team that came out on Saturday comes out, then we've got a chance. If the team that came out the week before comes out, then we'll probably get battered by. Is it Chile we got in our group?
Is it Chile? Have they filled the final place?
I think it might be Chile.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Doug, how much do you think the Saturday's performance is down to selection versus sort of bounce back following that humbling at the hands of the French the week before?
I don't think much of it's to do with selection. I think you've got a team. One of the main reasons I think the relative performances, is that you've got one team that haven't lost in forever, riding high at home against a team who are down on their luck and can't buy a good performance. I'm not convinced the Ireland players are massively better than the English players. I think they're probably a little bit better coached and have been for the Ireland players. That is, have been better coached for a significant period of time. They're more familiar with their system. They seem to actually have a game plan that I'm still yet to find anyone that could tell me what Eddie Jones's actual game plan was, other than kick the straps off the thing. I'm just not sure. Can you honestly tell me that Mack Hansen's a better winger than any of our wingers? I mean,
he's certainly a little fucking weasel.
Yeah. I think they had the advantage in the front row, probably, but the scrums weren't a big problem for England. For me, it just comes down to England aren't playing well and haven't played off two or three years and have been a bit rudderless and directionless and moribund. And Ireland have been building and building and building, and they won their World Cup final, beating England at home in the for a Grand Slam, and
ready for a quarter final World Cup.
Ready
exit.
For a quarter final exit in the World Cup. Yeah.
The thing with Ireland is they don't have any doubts at the key positions, whereas the key positions is where England have got all their doubts.
Yeah, so and look, they're going to have to enjoy it while it lasts, because after this World Cup, they're going to be decimated, and they haven't got a 10 that's anywhere near.
Yeah, I mean,
might be nearly. You know exactly. Old Johnny Sexton.
It's interesting you say that, isn't it? Because 4 or 5 years ago, Sexton was all but on the scrap heap, but they had absolutely no one to take over from him. So he's a bit like the Alan Wynne Jones of tens.
Yeah.
He's
and people still keep buying that wrap around. And...
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, right? Like he leads that side well, that back division well. He does his job exceptionally.
He's an horrible cunt, haven't he?
He is a horrible cunt. But if Ireland had found another 10 in the last 10 years, he wouldn't be playing for Ireland now. Like...
People keep saying, Ross Byrne, and there's a lad in the under-20s. Like, please, there's always a lad in the under-20s.
They've all come country. And went, though, haven't they? Carberry and Byrne, yeah. And, you know, they've all been hanging around a little while. But,
yeah. But he's better than all of them, isn't he? That's the other that's one. The point. Even now, he's better than him.
Billy, what's his face? Billy Burns.
Yeah.
But the point being that they were calling for Sexton's head. I think it was approximately 5 years
ago
when Ireland were on a real struggle, when they couldn't sort of buy a win, when they were in the position England were in now, and they didn't have anybody, so they had to stick with it.
But
and the continuity of all that, they, you know, the majority of that Leinster team, the continuity of selection, they've got a back row that all but picks itself now. They've got the second row, they've got three very good locks in or four if you count Ty Byrne as well, with Henderson and Ryan and the lad that played on Saturday, whose name escapes me.
Baird.
You know, the front row, you know, they were still trotting out the husk of Kean Healy until recently, and he probably would have been playing this tournament had he not been injured.
But, you know, but Furlong, like, go on. If you think about it, Russ, they've got like Furlong. Well, if he's fit, he walks to the side. No, there's no doubt about that. Well, we've got a prop in the same position that walks into the side, but only because there's literally no alternative. You've got Doris at number eight, who, like you say, is the automatic selection. Who's our best number eight? He's not eligible because he plays in France. We haven't sorted our scrum out.
Well, that remains to be seen. That remains to be seen whether he is actually our best eight.
Well, we can come to that in a bit, because we can look
until at he's done it. He's not an option, is he? So we don't need to have that discussion. No.
But we haven't got a number eight at the moment, because Don Brandt's not really set the world on fire. We don't want Billy back.
I just think very quick to write these players off, and you can't ignore what they're doing at club level, right? And be the Premiership, be what it may, they're doing it at club level, and that is the only option you've got for selecting players.
Yes.
You can't, like, I don't understand, what are we going to do? If there is a better performing number eight in the Premiership than Alex Donbrandt, then he'd be being picked, right?
Yes, but England, as a general rule, and has been proven...
Let's not forget, he was getting pissed in the union 3 years ago.
Yeah. No, and he got absolute pelters for that, you know, that final try against France, where Penaud just kind of absolutely gassed him, and he couldn't, like, expecting him to be prime Johnny May after 70.
I know. I mean, Damon,
just ridiculous.
Penaud, one of the best wingers in the... Is he a winger? He is a winger, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, gassing our number eight. Well, you're telling me he wouldn't have gassed Billy?
Mate, you're telling me you wouldn't have gassed Max Malins, or you know,
it's just like the standards to which our players are being held at the moment is staggering. Like, but by no means am I saying that these players are good enough to win a World Cup, because they're demonstrably not. What I'm saying is, like, they're the best we've got, and a lot of them are just starting out, and Donbrandt, international number eights have to learn their trade. And I think that step up, if you just discard someone after three or four games, you're going to end up with a scrap heap full of players who were never really given a good go of it. It's how NFL
sounds like. Sounds like
NFL quarterbacks get 16 games, and if you don't perform in your first year out of university, you're fucked off. And I think we're getting that way with England rugby players. We seem to have written Marcus Smith off. Now, I just don't understand that. Yeah. You know, everyone's clamouring for George Ford to come back, and he's proven time again that he's not the answer. So I don't understand what we're meant to do with these people. You could argue that the EQP, or the elite performance squad, has hamstrung Steve Borthwick in this particular cycle. I'm not sure there's any way on this earth that Dan Cole would be picked had that not have been a thing. And there's probably many other players that would be in the side but for that situation. So, you know, let's not forget as well, Ireland, state-sponsored rugby, they can pretty much do whatever they want. I don't particularly understand why that Leinster have got 30 international players and there's three other provinces who are struggling to get past the knockout round one in Europe. That doesn't seem to make a great deal of sense. Maybe it's a Dublin bias, but I mean, I've sort of wanked on a little bit, but to answer your original point, Russ, I don't think it was a selection thing. I think it's we put out probably the best 15 we could, and it wasn't good enough.
Yeah. So, I mean, on Saturday, the one thing that was noticeable was how much better England's pack was able to compete. Jack Willis against France was, you know, notable by his absence, really, as England got pulverised by the French forwards.
They had to for two reasons, Russ. One was they got pulverised and made to look a little bit silly, so they had to react to that. And also, Scotland had shown you could disrupt Ireland, at least to an extent, by just making the breakdown a mess. You know, Scotland were really successful at that. It was like the Wild West, wasn't it, that game at the breakdown. And, you know, England were trying to do that. And that was, you know, for all Willis has scored two tries against Italy a couple of times, that was his best game in an England shirt by a long way.
By a mile. But then now we're looking at the fact that that was probably his last game for England until such time he decides to come back from France. Now, not just
him. I think he gets dispensation, doesn't he? Because he left because Wasps. I don't think him being in France is a problem because it was not a financially motivated choice, was it?
I don't think he does because he's decided to stay.
Right.
Because he...
Well, look, I think that could also be telling that players are deciding to stay in France rather than... It must be a shit play. It must have been a really shit environment under Eddie Jones where a lot of these players have just gone, yeah, I can't do another cycle with that fucking Muppet.
Yeah, and you've only just got to look at the amount of players that are taking sort of the French money over the next few years to see that there is a real issue that England are going to have. And we, you know, pulling out the aging bodies of Marco Vinopola and Dan Cole. It looks like Courtney Laws is off to Toulon.
Have there ever been two less dynamic players on a rugby field at international level than Dan Cole, Marco Vinopola?
I'm going to argue that when Julian White played, he was probably less dynamic, or Trevor Woodman wasn't the most dynamic. I think the main thing for me is all the best teams, all the winners, the teams that are the most successful, and you can obviously count England's 2003 side in this. You can count the All Blacks in this. You can count South Africa and over the last few years in this, is that each player and each team, they've got a particular style that they don't deviate from, where everyone's got their own clearly defined role. And I think England's main problem at the moment is they do not have any sort of defined style with any sort of defined roles. They keep, you know, they've not set up, you know, we're 6 months, 8 months out from a World Cup. We don't know who's going to be playing 10 because nobody's made their mind up. Borthwick's had five matches. We don't know who's going to be playing in the centre. We don't know who's going to be playing on the wing. We don't know who's going to be playing in the back row. I think probably the only thing for certain is that the front row is likely to be Sinclair, George and Genge to start. It's probably the only place you can say, you know, they're guaranteed starters. So how are you supposed to build
maybe the row, maybe the row, I suppose.
What, with Itoje? I mean,
Chess and Mifit.
Well, I would argue, and I've quite liked Ollie Chessum, and I think he offers a bit of dynamism, and he is learning, and he is young. But for me, I felt that Dave Ribbons made a huge difference on Saturday, just physically, just that sheer physicality. I think that what we miss is, and what we've discussed privately, is England lack horrible bastards. they lack that little bit of nastiness and that little bit of bite. And I think that someone like Dave Ribbons offers that. I think he offers that element of physicality and that bit of bite. I think Lewis Ludlam offers the same. I've been really impressed with Ludlam this tournament. I think that for a 6-stroke 8, I wouldn't be adverse to seeing him play at 8, as we've talked about him getting the hard yards in the carry. You know, those 2 or 3 yards where Dom Brandt sometimes doesn't get that leg drive going. But other than that, you know, I'm struggling to see, you know, Van Poortvliet keeps getting the nod at 9. So it looks like he's going to be the one to beat for that channel. Mitchell didn't get a start in the tournament. You know, who else is nailed on other than maybe Stewart?
I think you could probably argue Stewart and Watson are nailed on. But I'd take your point. I thought Watson was really good on Saturday. I think England have looked so much better with Mitchell.
I just think he's a better rugby player than Van Poortvliet. I think every time I've seen Van Poortvliet, you can almost see Ben Young's influence. Yeah. Like, it's right there, isn't it? It's like, it's not with Mitchell, it's the decisions made before he gets to the ruck. With Van Poortvliet, it's like he makes a decision once he's there.
I know, like, you know, timing and the way the game is probably affects it, but it looked like Mitchell was getting the ball off the floor so much quicker and just it makes so much to a difference to a team. Is if the scrum half is going to pass, if he picks it up and passes it rather than thinks about it, which is, I appreciate, is exactly what Doug just said. But but surely if the team look better every time you bring your sub on, you ought to give him a try. And, you know, Van Poortvliet did do some decent stuff, but it was mostly defensive as much as anything. Because he's really in the team for his running threat, I would imagine, which didn't really happen at all. So, where's the plan there as well?
I think I said when Borthwick took over that initially we'd see a great deal of favouritism towards Leicester players. And I think we've seen that. I'm not sure I've bought the Chesham hype so far. Van Poortvliet, Dan Cole still getting picked despite everything. Freddie Stewart's probably the one that I wouldn't change. But I don't think you should expect anything less, really, because he had to go into Six Nations with a squad that, you know, if he was going to make any changes, he had to know the players very well so that they didn't have to adapt to his system. He could, the system was already in place for them. And maybe that's a problem, you know. I wouldn't say I'm worried about the World Cup because we're not going to win it. I just hope we get out of the group because that's the bigger issue at the moment. I'm not convinced we're going to get out of the group. I don't know what's happened during the course of this Six Nations that makes, I don't feel like we've come anywhere near working out who we are as a team, what we're doing, where we're going. You need to unmute your mic, you pleb. Dead air is a crime.
Dead air is a... Well, you could fill it with your massive mouth. I would argue that England haven't had that level of identity or any sort of identity really, you know, post 2000 and 2003. Like, yeah, we've tried to emulate 2003 on several occasions, just without the players. If you think we went from 2003 to the 2007 World Cup, where we... Was that Jack Ryle? Did Jack Ryle come back in for that?
And we, no, Brian Ashton. Brian Ashton,
that's it, Brian Ashton. And we limped our way to a World Cup final that arguably we could have won. We then went to 2011. Yeah,
got pumped.
2015, managed to get to a... what happened in 2015? Was that semi-final?
No, lost in the group in 15.
Yes, 15 was Robshaw, wasn't it? So again, that was Lancaster. Then 19, where we looked something like it. But again, we played some different, you know, that one performance against New Zealand, which became almost sort of era-defining under Eddie Jones. But as a team, you know the All Blacks are going to run. You know that they're going to produce exciting players. You know that South Africa are just going to try and beat you up and beast you up front. And they've happened upon some very good backs that have complemented that. England haven't had any sort of cohesive plan for ages. So is it time to just create one and go, right, this is how we're going to play rugby. I don't care whether you like it or not, but this is how we're going to play. And we're going to pick players according to what suits that style the best. Not just because they're playing in the Premiership as the, you know, for Harlequins. Yeah, if you're going to play the Harlequins way, right? So to use that analogy, you've got Smith, you've got Don Brand at 8, you've got a massive cunt at 12, and you play the way that Harlequins want to style play, because that's the way that Marcus Smith is and has been thriving. It also gets the best out of Alex Dombram. If you want to play the way that Leicester play and the way that they won the Premiership with box, or the way that Saracens did it with box kicking and just strangling opposition to death and wearing them into the ground, fine. Don't care what it is, as long as it becomes something.
So I think this is 2011 coming home to roost, personally. I think 2007 was the sort of last World Cup in the era of the sort of crossover players, the amateur professional crossover, right?
Yeah.
So in that 2011 World Cup, New Zealand won, right? So they won with players like Richie McCaw, Dan Carter,
Nonu, Comrade Smith.
Yeah, but what we strive for,
Mialamu,
we need to play rugby like the Southern Hemisphere. So we need to have forwards that can run like backs. We need to have backs that can hit like forwards. We just need these identical players that we're just going to shit out of academies and they're going to dominate the world. What's happened is everyone else has done that and our players just aren't quite good enough to cut it. So we've basically got these cookie cutter players. We're shitting out props who've got great hands and can play as a pivot, but we haven't got anyone that just bends over and fucking pushes. You know what I mean? And if you look through the age groups that are coming through, there's none there either. There's no just big fucking bastards that bend over and push.
Yeah.
Even Aaron Painter plays as a pivot when he played for Saints before he moved to Exeter. Do you know what I mean? His highlights are chip and chases and all that shit. Just bend over and push, Aaron. You weigh 30 stone.
Yeah.
You just get really good at pushing. I don't need you to do the hand stuff.
Yeah.
So we've created these players where skills are more important than functional ability. Functional ability for props. Second rows, jumping and being a shit bag. Back rows, we're doing all right for back rows because actually every back row we've got should really be either a center or a prop. They've either slimmed down to play as a seven or an eight, or they've got bigger. They've slimmed down from prop to play back row, or they've got bigger from centers and wingers to play back row. They've done one or the other. There's no just out and out class. You know, where are our centres? There are no centres because they either get converted to forwards.
Yeah. They're all playing. They're all playing at seven. All of our 12s. Yeah. All of our 12s are playing at six or seven.
Yeah.
All of the ones that showed any aptitude for carrying the ball, I think have been inadvertently pushed in towards the back row.
You can't tell me that players like Gabriel Ogre, Barbary, who's the guy that Saints picked up from Exeter?
Yeah, I can't remember his name. Aaron,
I mean, they Aaron, he was a great under 20s player.
Aaron
Hinckley. That man's a centre. Play him at centre, and it just, you want someone to play next to Smith, who's built like a brick shithouse and can carry. There's probably 20 of them playing in the back row.
Yeah,
because we moved from centre to forward. It's just like,
or they put them on the wing.
Probably because they're not skillful enough in the coach's eyes.
Ben,
to play as a centre.
Ben,
they don't have hands, or they don't have the, you know, reading of the game, because then they're not these all-seeing fucking mystical centres that can, like,
Ben's hit the nail on the head. Everyone was searching for this big cunt to play on the wing, to be like the next Jonolomu, to be, you know, the big winger is where it's at. Actually, imagine playing that guy at 12. I don't want you to do anything. Yeah. I want you to carry the ball straight.
Look, JB says it a lot about props, right? If you're a prop, you should be able to play loose head, tight head. If I was any one of these fringe back row players, I'd be fucking banging the coach's door down. Play me at 12, because there's a fucking gaping window for a 12.
Because you know
there ain't
what?
Many spots for a 7 or a 6.
Speaking of somebody who's played 12 a fair amount at a very shit level, right? You don't have to run too many different lines as a 12. Your best option as a 12 is always, always, always running straight. All of the other shit goes on around you, right? You're the person that's there to fix the man, maybe fix two. If you can fix two by one hard carry line, that creates space elsewhere, right? Whether you get the ball or not is fucking irrelevant. You don't have to be a gliding, like, you know, Marnonu in out look, around the back with
it's,
with
it's what people
offloads.
Wanted from 12s in the early 2000s. They wanted that second playmaker at 12.
Yeah, we touched on this briefly, didn't we, when we were talking about Ford, Farrell, Slade and Daly all being in the same back line. And as Russ just said, they want to push these big straight carry 12s. You know, in our day, they would have been put in at 12, but now they're on the wing. Like, if you think about what's the perfect 12 would be, I don't know, let's say a 6'2", pretty big, son of a World Cup winning fly half. Liner's playing on the wing.
Yeah.
So they think of trying him at 12? I don't know.
The epitome of an incredible... Why do you think Damian Dialende is so fucking good at being a 12? Other than the fact that he's 6'4" and probably 20 stone, right? He's played there his entire life. But also, he developed those the skills, the offload skills, the ability to pass and all that sort of stuff. The first thing I bet he was good at is being a massive cunt that could run straight. I bet that was his first attribute. I bet he was bigger than everyone else and went, you get there, we're going to give you the ball and you run straight and you're going to run fast.
Yeah, he wasn't working on his distribution skills, was he, at age group rugby?
No, he wasn't. No, he was working on being a fucking juggernaut.
Let me tell you, if he came through the England system, he'd be a 7.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I absolutely don't doubt it. So, you know, like Doug says, I think if anyone's listening to this, and you're thinking you might not get a game at 6 or 7 at your club or internationally, get yourself into your coach's office. Say you want to play 12 and just say, look, I can catch and I can run straight and hard. And let's see what happens.
I remember when rugby only needed one playmaker and he wore 10. And sometimes you play off 9.
Yeah. It was a simpler time. we haven't got long left of this evening's podcast. Not enough has been made of the performance of a certain Mr. Piper at the weekend. If anything, just to get the use of Jacko Piper's sex whistle back out there. And, you know, if you could ever find it, the episode of Jacko Piper's sex whistle is one of the funniest things that we've ever created. But he
was fucking shit.
As bad as so as bad shit. A referee performances as I've ever seen.
You just know before when you see him before the game, he's gonna break the game up anyway. So even if he doesn't do a ludicrous sending off, it's gonna make the game worse.
I'm not seeing any mitigation. I'm not seeing it, Mrs. Piper. Other than the fact that the ball was bobbling around and Hugo Keenan was coming from a half-bent position and Freddie Stewart was trying to get out of the way and Keenan literally ran into his arm that was flat by his side at lower than chest height. It was the most ludicrous.
Even concussion Twitter wasn't interested in it, was it? It's only Welsh, Scots and Irish that want a red card there, which just shows that they're just using it as an excuse to, you know.
Notice how he went down clutching his face as well, looking absolutely fanny.
I can't remember which page it was. They made a really interesting point, which was if you red card for that offence, you actually set a really bad precedent, because if you've got two options, which Stewart would have had, was keep going, get sent off and hurt the guy, or keep going, get sent off and don't hurt the guy, then the option most rugby players will take is I might as well take him with me.
He was getting sent in that situation. He was getting sent off whatever decision he made, apparently.
And there should never be any situation in a rugby match where you're put in a position where whatever you do, you're going to get sent off.
Yeah, agree.
A nonsense.
It's absolute fucking nonsense. So there you go. It'll be interesting to see where England go from here. Very, very quickly, when we get to the summer, Ben, how do you see things panning out for England and Borthwick ahead of the World Cup?
I mean, he's got a few, well, you know, he's got a lot of decisions to make. He's got to make a decision at 8, 9, 10, 13, basically. If him and Sinfield can get together, I mean, the defence really improved. I mean, the one thing that disappointed me a bit was the Irish sort of telegraphed that they were using that inside ball that their first try came from. I mean, they tried that about four times and we managed to stop it and we finally fell for it. But I think the defence got a lot better out through the tournament. So I've got no hope we're going to win the tournament, but, you know, I think we should improve.
Good. Doug, any last thoughts from you on...
It's going to go badly, mate. Badly.
Badly, but well, let's see. That's that. We may be back. I mean, it's unlikely we're going to talk about Premiership Rugby, but we'll be back at some point in the near future. And we'll speak to you all very soon. Go well.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.